This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow a standard orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take a seat.
I say.
You will obey. It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show about the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. I'm the TOS editor for the network, and with me today, as always, is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hello.
How's things? Is it still winter up there in Chicago, even though it's March?
Yeah, it was like 50 degrees 2 days ago, and then yesterday it started snowing again, so that's good.
We can't get away from it.
Yeah, what can you do?
I just finished watching Game of Thrones, or catching up with Game of Thrones, so I'm expecting this winter to last several years.
Okay, yeah, I don't get that reference, but that's cool. Yeah, yeah.
Seasons last for years in Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's cool.
So this is apparently my punishment for watching it. Well, this week, Mike decided that we should talk the comic books, and we're going to compare the IDW Star Trek Ongoing, which takes place in the JJ-verse, with the episodes that they've been based on. When the comics started, people didn't know what was going to happen, and they said that the comics were going to be clues to the content of Into Darkness, which it was in the most broad sense. In that each comic leading up to Into Darkness, save for a couple, were remakes of episodes showing what would happen if this crew encountered what classic Kirk and his crew would encounter, which is Into Darkness. What would they do if they encountered Khan? So this week we're going to compare the first two comics, issues 1 and 2, on Where No Man Has Gone Before, with the second pilot for the original series.
Yep. I thought it would be cool, to kind of look and see how, you know, what the parallels are, what the differences are, and what makes sense and what doesn't. And, you know, there's a number of episodes which have been covered by the comics. So, you know, we can return to this in the future and take a look at other parallels.
It'll be another C, comic comparison, an alliterative C. I'm excited. I like alliteration.
Yeah. So what did you think about this comic? Well, I mean, I guess first off, we've already talked about Where No Man Has Gone Before, the episode, and we're both rather fond of it. Is that correct?
Yeah. I like it better than The Cage, I think, is what we decided.
Yeah. I don't like it better than The Cage, but I do think it's really good as well. And then when this comic dropped in between the two movies, what were your thoughts on it?
Well, it had been a while since I'd seen the episode because we weren't doing the show. So I've been looking forward to doing something like this, actually going through and comparing step by step. I really liked it. I like the idea of not... Well, before Into Darkness came out, I liked the idea of let's show what the crew would do if this new crew would do if they were in these situations, because they've got the different relationships, they've got the different attitudes about things. And then Into Darkness came out, and they did the same kind of thing, but different. But I liked the comics when they come out. I still do. I haven't read any since Into Darkness came out. I read, like, Before Darkness, or whatever that was called, Pre-Darkness.
Countdown to Darkness.
Countdown to Darkness, that's what it was called.
Yeah.
I read it leading into Darkness, but I haven't read any of the comics after, so I don't even know if they're still doing episodes. I don't think they are they?
No, not really. Well, the After Darkness, you know, which everyone's like, well, the way it was
I did read the first episode of After Darkness, yeah.
Yeah, that was a muck time. had nothing to do with, you know, everyone's like the events in this movie are spiraling out and this is what, and it's like, oh, so it's just a muck time. Okay.
It's just a muck time.
All right. Well, that's fine. but after that, I think they've kind of gotten away from it. They did, just recently they did like a thing where there was like a parallel universe that mm-hmm. they go to where all of the genders are reversed.
That's silly.
So that was the most recent thing they did. But
okay, so they're trying to branch off into their own.
Yeah. They did one where it was like the Kittimer conflict, you know.
Ooh.
But yeah, you know, things like that.
Okay. So we'll cover the issues that have episode correlations in this series. But yeah, like I said, I was really looking forward to eventually doing something like this, comparing the two, so that in my mind I could find the differences and try to see what the comic writers are trying to say. They're overseen by Robert Orci, but I don't think that he like has a say in it, really. I'm sure that it's just like Lucas with the expanded universe. Is it okay if we kill Chewie? Yeah, sure, go ahead.
I think it's more of like Lucas with the Clone Wars, where, you know, he meets with them. You know, they might come up with an idea, but then he comes in and says, like, that's going to, you know, conflict with what we're doing. Or, yeah, that's kind of, you know, interesting. Why don't you do this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think what Orci's involvement is to basically make sure that it doesn't conflict with whatever they're doing on screen and to maybe provide a few suggestions here or there. That's the impression that I get anyway.
Okay. I'd like to be in one of those meetings. Yeah. Of course, I'd like to be in any of those meetings.
Yeah.
So the comic, the issue, it opens up with Kirk and Gary playing chess because Spock refuses to play with Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
While in the show, it's Kirk and Spock playing chess, and they're already very friendly. Spock is overly friendly, but that's because it's, you know, one of the pilots, so he's grinning about things and shouting about everything, which this comic Spock doesn't seem to shout all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, the dynamic is different right off the bat because of the nature of what has come before. You know, Spock is the first officer, and Gary, in this continuity, has been brought on along with Kelso by Kirk because he was friends with them at the academy, and he basically wanted to work with people who he knew he could rely on. So Gary is not first officer. He is, in fact, a backup for, I guess, Sulu, right?
I think he's a backup for Chekov.
Okay.
Again, right. We'll get into this navigator-helmsman conflict. But
and then Kelso is Sulu's backup?
Right.
Okay.
Which Sulu is astrophysicist in the episode.
Yeah. But in this, he's obviously just a helmsman. Well, not just a helmsman.
No, Kelso. Okay.
Mitchell is Sulu's backup. And, so Kelso is Chekhov's backup.
Which Kelso's like an engineer, I think, in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And well, Sulu's.
But doesn't Kelso like, I don't know, Kelso does a bunch of things, right?
Right. Kelso's pretty much one of the main characters at that point, which I suppose in Pilotville would be like, oh, Kelso, he's awesome, and then he gets killed. Spoilers to the comic and the show that we've already talked about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, in the prime continuity, Kirk and Gary were friends in the academy. Kirk was the upperclassman, because he says, like, you know, oh, you better watch out for upperclassman Lieutenant Kirk, you know, he'll get you. While in the comic JJ-verse continuity, they were a year ahead of Kirk, Kelso and Mitchell.
Right.
Which is a weird kind of thing to specifically point out in the comic, that maybe Kirk joined the Academy younger? That doesn't make sense. No.
But
he joined it later.
He joined it later in the new continuity, which makes sense, because there's the whole thing where, you know, he was just, because his dad died, he wasn't motivated. He was just hanging out in Iowa until Pike comes up to him and says, you need to make something more of your life.
That's it.
You know.
I get it now.
So So that's a nice little parallel that makes sense, or deviation that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, yeah, I was upset last night, but I didn't think it through all the way. Basically, a lot of the differences are the comic has, what, like 35 pages between the two issues to do the whole 53 minutes of pilot?
It's like 44 pages, which, I mean, I don't know exactly what the translation is, but I've kind of always thought, and like reading some adaptations and stuff like that, I kind of always thought that a page in a comic roughly translates to a minute in a televised program. So, I mean, to me, I mean, maybe there's a few more splash pages and stuff like that, but I think it's approximately the same length. It would be the length of an episode today, you know, with commercials and whatnot. That's the impression that I got.
The comic doesn't have dinner.
Yeah.
At all.
And there's a weird reference to that, too.
Yeah, I like that, because in the episode, they talk about how we just picked up this psychiatrist from Alderbaan.
Alderaan. Let's just call it Alderaan.
Okay.
Yeah. And in this continuity, Alderaan blows up.
Yeah, there we go.
So she's not there.
Actually, they've got a great thing in the episode. They talk about how she introduces herself to the captain. And the psychiatrist is brought on board. But in the comic, Kirk asks, what happened to that psychiatrist we were supposed to pick up? And McCoy says that she transferred. She didn't accept the transfer because McCoy was there. And apparently they had had. It's implied that they had a relationship. And it didn't end well. Which, because McCoy isn't on the Enterprise during Where No Man Has Gone Before, she accepts the transfer.
Yeah. And that's one of the things which kind of bothers me about this adaptation, you know, and in all of these adaptations, in a sense, you know, even going up to Into Darkness, in a sense, is if I were doing this, you know, my take on it would be, okay, given what has come before, when we get to the point where, you know, basically the inciting incident of that episode, okay, what is different? And because of that, you know, how does the story change, you know, when they reach that point? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, that's not what's going on, because there's a lot more parallels, and the inciting incident or whatever it is seems to occur much earlier in all of these stories, because the continuity, you know, I mean, this story takes place in 2258, right? Whereas the original would have taken place in, I think, 2264.
Yeah, that's what they did.
So,
but we've still got the same characters being transferred to the same ships at the same time.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, okay, I can understand Gary Mitchell being on there, but then you start getting into things where it's like, okay, so then Gary Mitchell gets, you know, zapped by the thing at the same, you know, and then the story plays out like almost exactly the same way. It's like I would have done something weirder and more different with it. Like, okay, since Sulu is at the helm, zap Sulu with the thing, you know, and see what happens with that, you know. Don't bring Gary Mitchell on, or maybe have him on, but in a different capacity. I don't know. I mean, that's what I would have done. But, you know, I guess the point is to do Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Yeah, it was the first issue. There were still, I mean, they go out of their way to change things in later issues that upset me. So
okay, all right. I mean, like, I don't know. It's tough, because to say, like, we want to do this, you know, like, the big problem to me going into it right off the bat is that you are 6 to 8 years behind the stories which you want to parallel.
Right.
I mean, and there's really no way around it. It's not like they have other stories which they could look at, you know. So, I mean, I don't really know what they could do in that sense, but I don't know. And there's other things which I think, you know, even though you know, this is kind of going back on what I'm saying, but there are certain problems which you could fix with the continuity by retelling these stories. If you are going to do it the way that they're doing it, you might as well say, like, okay, how about we don't take them out of the galaxy, you know, since that's like looking at the rest of Star Trek continuity, that's like way out there compared to
literally.
Yeah. So change that a little bit, but
don't call the planet Delta Vega.
Right.
Even though there already been a Delta Vega.
Yeah. And they like name check it in this, like an episode of Law and Order, so as not to get sued by the other Delta Vega or something like that. I mean, yeah.
Kirk, weren't you marooned on another Delta Vega? Let's not talk about it.
So anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off on a tangent there, but.
No, that's good. Tangents are good. That's why we're doing this.
Or jump ahead, but yeah.
So in comic book, they make Mitchell's transformation come a lot faster in that, they don't bother to be like, oh, you know, let's beam on the beacon aboard and let's look at it. And oh, the tapes are burned out. Like they read the beacon stuff just from the bridge while it's still floating out there. And Spock's just like, oh, apparently people at ESP and it went bad.
Yeah.
And Mitchell's powers, instead of like, oh, he's reading kind of fast, goes from McCoy saying he's reading fast to him telekinesing everything in sickbay.
Yeah.
Instead of just being like, oh, we caught you sneaking a drink of water from across the room. And another thing that I thought was different, was that might be interesting, is that Mitchell can tell that the impulse engines are out of alignment from the ship itself in the comic, but in the episode, he can do it because he read Kelso's mind.
Yeah. And that's cool. You know, I mean, that's a reasonable thing to do.
And I'm guessing that's saving on pages on having, you know, Kelso come in and visit and having dinner come in and visit, and then having Kirk and Spock come in and visit, and then them all leave and stuff, when they could just do it all at once. Yeah. Everybody come in, and everything's covered.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me is that in the comic, there's a lot less punching, which in the movies, in the JJ movies, there's a lot more punching than what, you know, Kirk and Spock would do in those situations.
I guess
But I noticed, like, in the comic, Gary's, you know, immediately like, aha, you're gonna abandon me on this planet. So he shocks Kirk and McCoy hyposprays him.
Mm-hmm.
But in the episode, he shocks Kirk and Spock, and then they both, like, punch him and then knock him out with just their fists. And you'd think, as, you know, the crap that people give the JJ verse and stuff, that, you know, action, that it would be JJ's Kirk that would be punching people in the face and not Shatner. Well, Shatner would punch people in the face.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with sort of the medium. I mean, the thing that people talk about and, you know, Star Trek belonging on the small screen and, you know, being able to do smaller stories and more, you know, character-driven stories and stuff like that. I think that the same sort of applies to comic books. You know, the comic books are sort of like a proxy for the for a television series right now. And because of that, you know, you don't need to have a lot of punching and stuff. It doesn't need to be a big spectacle action thing. It can be just a character thing.
Right. Some other differences that I noticed were that Kirk has Kelso make like a self-destruct in the episode when they really don't have time in the comic book. They immediately cut to him escaping.
Mm-hmm.
And that Spock brings the phaser rifle down that Kirk is upset that Spock brought in the series. So it seems that J.J. Kirk understands Gary's danger more, I guess, because he immediately was just like, I'm crazy, and starts zapping people.
Yeah.
So J.J. Kirk seems more willing to accept that he has to kill his friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Gary seems to deserve it. Like, the really heartbreaking part of the comic is Gary escaping and going up to Kelso and forcing him to shoot himself, mm-hmm. as opposed to, like, choking him remotely from his cell. And that shows that Gary's... I think that shows that this Gary is even further gone than the episode Gary.
Yeah. Maybe perhaps because he's younger and more reckless, you know, just like Kirk is in the new continuity. Mm-hmm. Maybe that has something to do with it. I mean, maybe it's also kind of a way, or maybe it's manifesting because he is now the subordinate to this guy who, his friend who he was always sort of above.
Right.
I don't know.
Which does come up during the temptation of Kirk scene.
Mm-hmm. But Kelso didn't die in the original, right? Yeah, because he stuck around for a while, didn't he?
No.
No?
He got choked.
He got choked and then he got choked. Right. Okay. For some reason I thought that he was a recurring character, but
I think maybe the actor came back.
I don't know.
Because it's a pilot and none of it really counts.
Right. Okay. I guess I remember him getting choked, but I wasn't sure whether or not he actually died there.
Yeah, I think Piper says something about him dying.
Okay. All right.
Speaking of Piper, in the episode, he finds Kirk and Spock after they get shocked after Mitchell escapes. And Kirk deliberately tells Piper not to wake Spock up, but to tell, you know, wake Spock up on the ship and tell him to leave and, you know, give Kirk some time and then leave them both behind, him and Mitchell. While in this one, McCoy or Scotty wakes both of them up in the comic. And Kirk directly tells Spock that not to come after him. He's going after Mitchell, and then he needs to leave with the Enterprise in 3 hours.
Yeah.
Which, in the episode, explains why Spock doesn't go after Kirk. Because he's back on the ship. But in this one, Spock does go after Kirk because Spock's still on the planet.
Which creates a nice scene for Spock and Kirk at this point in their relationship, because, you know, Spock is like, Kirk, you shouldn't do this. And Kirk's like, I'm the captain, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Trying to show that he belongs there, that he can make the tough choices.
Mm-hmm.
So Show Gary tempts Dr. Diner to be his Eve by showing him a garden and all this fruit. But in the comics, he just is showing off to Kirk. Like, look, I can make a garden. I can do anything. And then he shows Kirk the past, like showing Kirk in the bar where he got into the fight in the first movie, and then shows him in school taking a test.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird, but...
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand the taking a test part. Like he said, like, oh, you wish that Gary was there helping you pass your test. I guess to cheat off of him? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I think that was the idea. It's like looking over my shoulder or whatever. You're wishing your pal Gary was there to slip you the answers is what the line is. Because the whole point, you know, which he says here is like, you wouldn't have that captain's chair without me. And now you want to destroy me.
And this next difference I thought was very interesting is that Show Gary is convinced that he's a god and he deserves worship. And so he forces Kirk to kneel before him and pray to him. While Comic Gary has Kirk kneel and beg for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
For, I really like this quote, his pitiful vibrato that thinks it's enough to overcome any obstacle.
Yeah. And that's playing into, you know, what they were dealing with the Kirk character in general. You know, the young captain who's, you know, thinks he's unstoppable, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, there's a lot of that. And that's sort of like what they're doing with his relationship with with Mitchell. You know, Mitchell is the upperclassman and whatnot, and he's jealous of Kirk essentially for Kirk's success.
I like that. I like that difference. I think it's a difference I didn't notice when I was just reading the comic, but when I was doing this comparison, I found that very interesting, very telling. That this Gary is more interested in, it sounds like almost interested in making Kirk a better person, as opposed to show Gary that just wants to prove his power and show that he is a god.
Mm-hmm.
And then things get really weird in the differences. In the show, Gary and Denner start doing their godlike, emperor zaps to each other, which makes Gary human long enough for Kirk to, again, punch him in the face. So they fight for a while. And then Gary gets god powers again. And then Kirk pushes him into a grave, which we don't get in the comics. We don't get James R. Kirk on the gravestone. And then Kirk shoots a rock and it falls on Gary. Even though he has god powers, it still kills him.
Yeah.
Which is weird. But then in the comic, Spock nerve pinches him, which makes him lose his powers, and Kirk just shoots him, which makes a lot more sense than, you know, let's get into a fist fight first, and then I'll try to kill you as you're getting your powers back.
And one of the things that I like about this scene, well, one, you know, it brings one of the main characters into a more prominent role in the climax, since you don't have Denner there. But the other thing is the very last panel from them on the planet, where you see Kirk kneeling over Mitchell's body, is pretty sad, because he's just obviously very distraught over the fact that he just killed one of his best friends.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that comic book Kirk didn't get to rip his shirt. Mm-hmm. He didn't get in the battle and didn't get to rip his shirt. So
I imagine
Pine's missing out on the shirt ripping.
I think these new shirts have that Nike wire flex technology that they have in like the football jerseys around the collar, so that if people grab them, they won't, you know, tear, you know, stuff like that.
Okay.
So
I can see that.
I think
in this more action running oriented Starfleet.
Right. They have the fly wire thing, I think is what they call it. Yeah. So
I can see that.
Yeah.
Whisks away sweat and doesn't rip.
Mm-hmm. Right.
See, good sports. Your sports knowledge is helping us understand Star Trek uniforms better. But overall, I think the moral of the story, they didn't change the moral of the episode, I don't feel. And to me, Where No Man Has Gone Before is about absolute power corrupting absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk having to make the tough choice with his friend. So that basic thing is there in both.
And the ending, I think, is better, because it ends with, you know, Kirk in a very sort of reflective state, you know, whereas the other one is like, I think there may still be hope for you yet, Mr. Spock, you know? And I mean, you know, because he's like, I felt for him too, or whatever, but,
yeah,
you know, and it really does sort of, you know, add texture to Spock and Kirk's relationship, I guess, by, you know, with Spock saying, maybe we could play some chess later on, you know, or something like that. But, yeah. Yeah, I agree that on the whole it is, you know, the same thematically and everything like that. It's true to the original, but updated, tweaked here and there, mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of made to work for the new continuity a little bit more. It's interesting.
Yeah. The major difference to me is Spock.
Mm-hmm.
In the comics, in the movies, they're not very friendly at this point. You know, Spock just lost his whole planet. He's now serving under this kid who cheated on his test and was super proud of it. And, you know, sure, they banded together with old Spock and, you know, saved the day, but they don't really get along even at the end of 2009. So this incident with Gary, with, I think, with Spock disobeying that direct order, go back to the ship and leave without me, Spock disobeying that order and coming to save him, I think, allows them both to realize that they need to put aside their differences and work together like this, that they do better together, like old Spock was trying to say, to young Spock, Quinto Spock.
Yeah.
That you guys need to work together. You're the best team ever. You're the best around.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that it's neat to have this alternate take and to see what this new crew in this new continuity would do under these circumstances.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good issues. I'm looking forward to talking about them.
Yeah.
Well, that was Comic Comparison issue 1 and 2,
mm-hmm,
of the IDW JJ-verse. But that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
A lot of time commentary.
He's got his,
I love his
3D
room
chest
with, yeah, the weird lights. And
well, he shops at Spencer's.
Yeah, whatever, yeah, that is.
Oh, poor Colin.
Oh, that joke will kill in America.
Earl Grey.
Geordi LaForge.
They're, you know, Sherlock and Watson flying in the face of copyright laws that they didn't realize at the time.
The Ready Room.
Emergence.
The entire scene that Picard and Beverly have is about one-upping each other with pointless trivia about the, yeah, Orient Express that they each have. Well, did you know? Well, Beverly, I knew that, but did you know this? And it's like, what is the point of this scene? I don't...
The Orb.
Trail on Trial.
There are motifs that carry through, like holding,
right,
her hands behind her back.
Right, exactly. And that's where I think you get the variation on a theme. You know, it's not a new song. It's not even a new verse. It's a reordering of notes to create something different and yet similar.
To the journey!
Costumes on Voyager.
Take that, Enterprise D. That's right. You think your mind was blown in 87. Just wait until you see it in 97. Warp 5.
TOS impressions of seasons 1 and 2.
Once I actually started watching it, I began to understand that it was about our future leading into TOS. It's more of a sequel for us than it is a prequel for TOS.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The X-Files, Small Potatoes.
When I get to this episode, I get excited.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the ones that I continually find more things to like about it.
Melodic Treks.
The music of a Mock Time.
Yeah, we can do a Muppets podcast, too. I mean, at this point, we might as well, right?
Right.
I mean, we're doing every other show.
Literary Treks.
The Return of the Serpent.
So they all shoot the dinosaur, and then they look back, and
they
the Klingon...
have to shoot the dinosaur.
And then the Klingon's like, no, I can't do it. I don't want to shoot him. I can't. If I do it, then I'll turn into one of those Klingons that I don't like. You mean one of the Klingons that's helpful?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek talk. You find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune. Or you can stream from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. We have some listener mail that I put into a folder and forgot we had.
Oh, cool.
So this is from Chris Baca, CB Spock, from San Antonio. And he says, just finished show 21, Star Trek 101. You guys made some interesting choices and made good arguments for the episodes and movies you included. These are the 10 I would pick if the viewer's only experience with Trek were the JJ films. I think these choices point out some of the character backstory differences and put some context around the new films. His first is Balance of Terror, Kirk and Command-focused episode, just like the films, but with a more mature Kirk. 2, okay. Corbomite Maneuver. 3, Space Seed, Introduction to Khan. 4, Doomsday Machine, really good, great episode for Kirk, Spock, and Scotty. 5, City on the Edge of Forever. 6, The Trouble with Tribbles, which introduces the Klingons, and now the viewer would know why they were all laughing when we met Scotty on Delta Vega in Trek 2009, because he had the Tribble next to it.
Yes.
7, Journey to Babel, introduction to Spock's parents, so viewers can see the differences in character between the original series and the new JJ verse. Some lines of dialogue in this episode are actually in Star Trek 09 between Spock and Sarek. 8, Wrath of Khan. 9, The Search for Spock. Some really great character moments to contrast and compare with Into Darkness and Trek 09. And 10 is The Voyage Home, since all three go together. See, that's interesting. He included Search for Spock to go to Voyage Home, and you included Search for Spock to go to
Star Trek 6.
See, we've all got different ways.
Well, it's one of those things where, I mean, you know, like with Wrath of Khan, it's like Wrath of Khan, Search for Spock, and Voyage Home are a trilogy. You know, everyone says that. But really, they're boxed together. Yeah, they are boxed together. But you could literally stop after any one of them and just be like, well, that's the end. You know, you could stop at the end of Wrath of Khan and be like, eh, you know, there's no part 2 or 3. And you could do that with Star Trek 3 again. And you could, you know, also go on to number 4 if you want.
Yeah. He continues. So what 10 episodes movies would you pick to give someone a taste for the whole franchise? It's really hard to do. I tried to stay with episodes that relate to something in a later series. I went with the Mirror Universe and Borg as the overarching themes and a few standout episodes. So Chris's top 10 for the whole franchise, which I couldn't even begin to make my own list of that yet.
Mm-hmm.
He's got City on the Edge of Forever, Mirror Mirror, The Tholian Web, which is clever because it ties into In a Mirror Darkly, Inner Light, Best of Both Worlds, Family, The Visitor, Crossover, Scorpion, and In a Mirror Darkly.
Okay. Well, I have sort of done something like that for the franchise on the whole. What I did was, you know, September 8th, 2016, right? The 50th anniversary. It is September 8th, right? I always get, is it whether it's the 8th or the 9th, but it's the 8th, right?
I think it's the 8th.
It's got to be the 8th, yeah. So what I've always said that I want to do and what I'm planning on doing, and I can't imagine not doing, is having a Star Trek marathon viewing party, whatnot, where we do look at everything from the franchise, you know, sort of like the best of all that the franchise has to offer, you know, and kind of come up with, you know, a sampling of the whole thing. And I timed it all out and everything like that. I had certain criteria. I wanted to start with the very first adventure and end with the very last adventure, you know, so start with the cage and end with, at that point, what I think is going to be Star Trek
3.
Yeah, Star Trek. Yes, exactly. And then hit like basically the best episode of each series. Not what I think is the best episode, but what is considered to be the best episode. So you got City on the Edge of Forever, Yesteryear, Wrath of Khan, Best of Both Worlds, First Contact, Scorpion. For DS9, I'm not sure. It probably the one where the one that Mark Scott Zikri wrote, the where they're in the past and the Benny.
Oh, past prologue? No.
No. Oh God, why can't I think of it right now? It's on the tip of my tongue.
the one with the vision, with the
where he's the writer,
the
science fiction writer, and I can't come up with the name right now. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, I just had it,
but oh well. And then, you know, for Enterprise, I'm not exactly sure yet either. Maybe like Twilight. Maybe I'll go with In the Pale Moonlight and Twilight, whatever. And then at 7:30, right at 7:30 Central Time, you know, the Man Trap, you know, you got it, right? So you're watching that thing at the same time, exactly 50 years ago that everyone else was watching it, and then end it with, you know, like Star Trek 09 and then Star Trithreek, theoretically, or Into Darkness if Star Trithreek isn't out yet, you know?
Yeah.
So that, I mean, it would, I'd have to start at like 7 a.m. We'd be ending around, you know, midnight or something like that, 1 a.m. I'm totally doing that.
Do it. Maybe I'll come up for it.
Oh, yeah, you got it. It's going to be the best. So I guess that's sort of my equivalent to what CB was going for.
It's a Thursday. That's disappointing.
Yeah. Oh, come on. You can't take the day off of work for that?
Well, I will.
All right. Okay, cool.
2 years from now. I think we've got plenty of time to plan for it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the plan. So thanks.
That sounds awesome.
Thanks, CB.
Yes, he closes out his letter saying, I'm really enjoying the show. Keep up the great work.
Oh, thanks again, CB.
Yeah, you should keep up the great work listening to us and interacting. We like it.
Yeah.
If you'd like to interact with us, there's a few places you can go. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. You can choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and our other listeners on our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you outside of Trek FM or on Trek FM or and also places?
They can find me far beyond the stars.
That's the name.
At commentarytrackstars.com, where we do commentary track stars off topic, or you can find me on trek.fm, where I do commentary track stars, or you can also find me on Twitter at mumbles3k, or you can email me at comtrackstars@gmail.com.
You can find me on Twitter at, I forgot.
005.
That's right. 005, DOUBLEOFIVE. And you can find me on, except for To the Journey, I'm pretty sure that I've been on every show on the network.
Really?
I think so. Because I just recorded Literary Treks and a Warp 5 and an Orb. I think you need to get around more.
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, well.
But you've got two weekly shows. I think that you're covering your own bases there.
Yeah.
And you've had everybody from those shows on your show, so
for
that
the most
counts.
Part, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you each week, and our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible's a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read, but never thought you'd have time for. Audible's the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, do you have something for everyone?
Yeah, I do. I have the Star Trek movie tie-in, which is the novelization of the Star Trek 09 movie. It was written by Alan Dean Foster, who, of course, had a hand in writing Star Trek The Motion Picture. It's narrated by Zachary Quinto. And it says, in the far reaches of the galaxy, a machine of war bursts into existence in a place and time it was never meant to be. On a mission of retribution for the destruction of his planet, its half-mad captain... Only half mad.
He's only half mad.
Seeks the death of every intelligent being and the annihilation of every civilized world. Is that really accurate?
No.
Okay. Kirk and Spock, two completely different and unyielding personalities, must find a way to lead the only crew aboard the only ship that can stop him. Okay.
The only ship in the quadrant.
Yeah. And you can get the Star Trek movie tie-in for free since you're a listener on Trek.fm.
That's right. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Trek books you've yet to read and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. And lastly, there's one more way you can help us support Standard Orbit, and that's by adopting some aliens, well, the illustrations of aliens, actually. If you go to trek.fm/donate, you'll find 8 original alien illustrations by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the artwork you see on our website. They're available as both badges and art prints, and there are different contribution levels for you to choose from. Just let us know which you would like in which format. Again, you'll find them at trek.fm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each week. Well, that was fun. That was a good idea. It was a good idea. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, it was fun. We'll have to return to this, you know, and take a look at Galileo 7.
Oh, that is the next one. It's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
In both the comic and the show. So. Yeah. Fantastic.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.